Good afternoon, members and members of the public. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee meeting for today. First on our agenda is the approval of minutes from our last meeting. Representative Dean, have you studied the minutes?
No. I did not get a copy of the minutes, actually.
You didn't? Well.
It's in a different spot.
Come back to them later. It's in the next folder?
Mr. Chair?
Sorry. I always look for it in my
Mr. Chair?
Folder and all my other folders.
Mr. Chair?
I can move the minutes.
Mr. Chair?
Approve the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Dean has moved that we approve the minutes of Thursday, April 7th. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Opposed by the same sign.
Mr. Chair?
Representative O'Driscoll?
How can we approve minutes for a meeting that hasn't occurred?
Oops, sorry.
I did not check the date. I'm sorry.
Can we reset the clock and start over? Did I have the wrong minutes?
Oh, yeah.
No, Mr. Chair, I would say that we amend these to say April.
Well, I'll just read on to the end and see how it turns out.
We're going to assume that last vote was inconsequential because it involved an improper date, and we're going to reconsider the approval of the minutes. Representative O'Driscoll, would you care to amend the minutes of the last meeting?
Mr. Chair, I would, and if staff would help me, I believe it was yesterday, April 6th, if I'm not mistaken, was the last meeting. Am I correct on that?
I believe Representative O'Driscoll actually would have been April 5th.
5th, correct. So I amend the minutes to read April 5th, and I'll then move them as corrected.
No, you can't do that. You're one thing at a time.
Okay.
Representative O'Driscoll moves that we correct the minutes and insert the date April 5th in place of April 7th. All those in favor with that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by the same sign. Representative Dean, would you care to renew your motion to approve the minutes of April 5th?
Mr. Chair, I would renew the approval of the minutes as amended for April 5th.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Thank you. That was easy. This may be, today is the first bill we're going to vote on this year. We decided we did vote on a couple things last year because we did vote out some vehicle bills. So it's not the first vote ever with me as chair, but it is the first vote this year, and so it's an auspicious day. We have just one bill before us. Representative Vogel, would you care to proceed to the testifiers table? Representative Vogel is going to move House File 2790. I'm dyslexic today, too. 2970. To be passed and sent to Ways and Means.
Oh, I'm going to be speaking.
Right here, sorry.
Wait just a minute.
Welcome to the testifiers table, Representative Vogel.
I do move House File 2970 to be passed to Ways and Means.
Thank you. I'm just going to give a little roadmap here for folks. There is going to be an amendment to this bill. I'm going to have Ms. Representative Vogel present his opening remarks first so we kind of know what we're talking about, and then we'll go on to the amendment before we move on to more discussion about the final bill. I don't know if anyone in the public is interested in testifying on either the amendment or the bill, but I will give the public opportunities in both cases if they care to make any remarks. Representative Vogel, please go ahead with your opening remarks.
Thank you. And by the way, the treats are coming around. I often sat with the group, but I have not presented in front yet, so I wanted to make sure that I had sweetened you up for this presentation, so it'll go well. House File 2970 sets a 3.5% cap for bond payments paid out of the non-dedicated general fund revenue. In doing so, it puts in place a cap beyond the guidelines which are now being used by MMB. Whereas the current guidelines deal with how much in bonds can be outstanding, this cap looks at how much of the general fund will be needed to make payments. Helpful analogy would be to relate the bill's intent to a home mortgage. When somebody decides to buy a house, they are typically told how much they qualify for. which then becomes the amount of outstanding debt they are told they can handle relative to their down payment and other factors. In addition to that, however, the person looking to get the mortgage also needs to know how much of their income they are able and willing to spend on the payment relative to their future plans and financial well-being, which is called the debt service. We as a state are currently doing the qualify for amount using MMB guidelines. But in 2009, the how much we can afford of our income general fund revenue test, guideline, was removed, so we no longer look at that guideline. House File 2970 puts that affordability measure back into practice by capping the amount that can be used for all debt payments paid out of the undedicated general fund revenues in any period to no more than 3.5% of forecast general fund revenue for that period. The cap is applied to all obligations for which the payments are made from the general fund and looks to all periods in the revenue forecast. Prior to 2009, the debt service measurement was used as one of the three initial guidelines which have been put in place since 1979. One of them being a debt service guideline and the other two dealing with total outstanding debt. When they were originally adopted by the Governor Quay administration in 1979, the debt service guideline was 2.5% of general fund revenue. Over the years, there were some adjustments, and by the mid-1980s, the debt service guideline settled at 3%. Over the years, two more guidelines were added, another dealing with total debt outstanding, and one to limit maturities. From that point on, the 3% did not change, but there were varying interpretations which helped to circumvent the 3% in some cases. The most recent example of the use of those exceptions was the use of appropriation bonds in 2008, which seemed to have been one of the reasons to remove the debt service guideline, because there was conversation as to whether they were a long-term legal obligation of the state, which was part of the definition in the 1979 guidelines. So this added further subjectivity to the measure of the debate that had occurred over whether or not a debt service guideline should be in place, because they were being interpreted differently. Because of this evolution over the years, and often the lack of definition as to what was included in the debt service ratio calculation, the new guidelines dropped the debt service guideline. So starting in 2010, the new guidelines no longer used the payment to revenue guideline because it was decided it no longer was needed to manage the amount of debt being accumulated. It's important to note, however, when that happened, there was no longer a look forward measurement since all the others were static, that is, point in time measures. Whereas before, the debt service guideline looked forward to payment needs from the general fund, so conclusions could be made about both present and future uses of the revenue available for debt payments relative to other needs of the state's non-dedicated revenues, such as HHS, education, transportation, so forth. Going back to the 2008, when the historic guidelines were still fully in place and being utilized, the annual debt service using all payments from the general fund was $409 million, rounded, and represented 2.545% of the general fund revenue. In 2015, the payments had increased to $752 million, rounded, and were 3.67% of revenue. So the difference in dollars from 2008 to 2015 has been $342,825,000 per year, which is a percentage increase of 83.7. That increase reflects a significant increase of 49.7% in the percent of revenue now needed to service the debt from the non-dedicated general fund. It also includes $129 million of debt outside the general obligation debt that was used almost exclusively as the benchmark prior to that time, before the new guidelines were put in place. To more carefully manage the state debt, I drafted House File 2970, which states clearly that debt payable from the non-dedicated general state general fund revenues is that to be included in the calculation of the debt limit ratio. So what I'm saying there is that there was a lot of confusion up from the 1970s until 2010 when this was taken off, because there wasn't really a clear definition of what numbers had to be used, because they kept changing the type of obligation, and the guideline referred to the type of obligation, i.e. a general obligation, rather than the amount of dollars. So what 2970 is doing is equating the total dollars that come out of the general fund to make payments. It also provides a look forward, since it states the ratio needs to be determined for all years forecast. The rationale for the cap is both to give the legislature information it needs to provide good financial management of the availability of non-dedicated revenues for all areas of state government, as well as setting a cap so both the public and those purchasing state debt see the legislature as managing debt in a sound manner. The cap does allow bonding this year, if that is the choice of the legislature, and is not intended to be a statement on whether or not bonding is good or not. Rather, it's a way for the legislature to determine how much debt is prudent to allow both now and in the future, so the payments on the debt do not overburden both today's and tomorrow's taxpayers with obligations they find difficult to fund.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. I think I'll have you go ahead and explain the amendment to the bill, the A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment moves from the initial bill 3.35% to 3.5%. And the reason for that is that I was trying to be as inclusive of everything with the debt that needs to be looked at. And as the bill was drafted, the 3.35% seemed to make sense. After looking at more information, it became apparent that that really wasn't going to work in today's environment, so it amends it to 3.5%. It also goes on to say that the debt does not have to be redeemed if there's another budget forecast that precludes it from a future period. So let's say that the budget forecast comes out and it's not as good as it is right now when we're issuing the debt, but we have to, by the way, you do have to issue it with the task in mind of keeping it consistent to 3.5 in all periods. But if for some reason there's a future revenue forecast that comes out and says that the debt should have been issued for less, you don't have to redeem the debt. Now, it would preclude, in some cases then possibly, the issuance of new debt until you get back into sync with the 3.5. But it wouldn't make us take general fund money and buy back bonds to get to the 3.5. So the intent of the amendment is twofold. First of all, to raise the threshold from 3.35 to 3.5, and then also to address the difference that could occur in a revenue forecast after people have done in good faith following the previous one.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Representative Vogel moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Representative Hausman.
I would just request a roll call on the amendment. That is unusual, but you've heard me talk about this issue before, and I have sort of a visceral reaction to the whole discussion, and so I do want to be on record in opposition to both the amendment and the bill, and so I would request a roll call on the amendment.
Thank you for that request. Any discussion to the amendment? Anyone in the public care to add any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, we'll take a vote on the A1. Roll call vote. Chair votes aye.
Hausman? Hausman?
No.
Atkins?
No.
Dean?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Howe?
Yes.
Lilly?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Pulowski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Barrick?
Yes.
Runbeck?
Yes.
Smith?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
Uglum?
Yes.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Vogel?
Aye.
Wagenius?
No.
Yep, I got her. Hold on.
There being 10 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment passes. So let's move on then to the bill as amended. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know you've heard me go through this litany before. It is something I feel so very strongly about, and it's based on advice from many other people as they've looked at this. First of all, debt guidelines have served us well. We respect them. We stay within them. And we do not borrow without limit. I only remember two governors getting involved in this. One was Governor Perpich, who came up with the, I think that, as I recall the story, they were standing in the hallways at the bond houses in New York and thought they should come up with something, and they decided on 3% of the general fund, which we lived with for quite a while. But rating agencies pay attention. They pay attention to what we do about this. They certainly pay attention to our economy, to our spending levels and how we balance the budget, but they also compare us to other states. And they always, if you've ever read those really informative pieces when they make their ratings of the state, there is always a comparison of us and other states in terms of debt level. And their observation is, if you have a percentage of general fund, that comparison state to state is not really possible because the general fund of every state is made up so differently, what people include in it. And so a comparison across the country is more difficult. So the guidelines we currently have, believe it or not, were written by Governor Pawlenty and his administration. And he took the advice of those rating agencies and others by saying a better comparison state to state is a percentage of personal income. And so he did that for the purpose of everyone who looks at us and determines how well we are doing with budget and debt and so forth, that comparison state to state is better done as a percentage of personal income. Then he further said, in a way that other governors hadn't, I also want to quantify all debt and have a measure for that, which is what he did. So there were reasons why Governor Pawlenty moved in that direction. The other piece of this, to put something in law, that also we have been warned about, because if the bottom drops out of the economy dreadfully, we could be in violation of state law. We could be in violation of state law if we write this in. The advice about this has always been they should be guidelines for other reasons, but for that specifically, that if you write this in law, you could be, and the bottom drops out of the economy, you could be in violation of the state law. And what would be your options then? Then the rating agencies would really be paying attention to how we reverse that in statute, because we would have to come back and reverse it in statute. So it is it's an issue that I have had some fairly strong feelings about. Mr. Chair, I do see that MMB is here, and I wonder if it would be possible to ask Margaret Kelly to come forward, and maybe we could just address a couple of questions to her.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. I think before we have Ms. Kelly make her presentation, I'd like to have Bob finish up with, I should say Representative Vogel finish up with his presentation, because I know he has some charts that I think we should take a look at, and then we'll bring Ms. Kelly down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had asked Andrew Lee from House Research to just provide some information. I know when I read this stuff, sometimes it's a little bit hard to grasp all those numbers. So what Mr. Lee has done is put together some charts just so that we can kind of visualize better what I'm talking about.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record. Go ahead with your presentation.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. In your packet, you should have a number of charts that I prepared. Some are a little bit more background information, and some are one is more specific to the legislation in front of you. First, I would turn your attention to the chart that looks like this. that has the annual general fund debt service spending. It's a bar chart. And this chart tracks general fund spending from 1990 into the forecast period up to 2019. And the first component of this that runs throughout the chart is the general obligation debt. And you'll notice that there's a dip starting in 2010 and 11, and then a kind of a strange thing that happens in 12 and 13, and that is a result of the one-time payment from the tobacco securitization bonds because of a general fund deficit in the 2011 session. I'll just note sort of the top components of this bar chart are some of the appropriation bond debt service streams that have come about since about 2008. So again, this is kind of just for background. And then the second chart that have the committee draw their attention to is the debt service spending as a percent of state general fund revenue. This is that debt service, and what that is a percentage of the general fund revenue. And you can see the darker bars are just the GO debt service, and then the lighter bars are the GO debt service plus the additional debt service for appropriation bonds. And then there's a chart that I won't go through, but this is the longer legal slide sheet that just has all those numbers. The last chart that I would draw the committee's attention to is the color one with the components of the principal outstanding. So this is the debt, the principal amount that counts towards the guideline one limit that's currently a guideline from MMB. And then finally, the last chart relates specifically to House File 2970 as amended. And this shows...
point out that chart, Mr. Lee.
Oh, sorry. It says House File 26 or 2970 debt management guideline at 3.5%.
So it's a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this shows the various components of debt service, GO various purpose, general fund debt service from capital projects, and then on line 5 you see the lease purchase and other debt service. This is debt service and agreements that aren't necessarily covered in the capital budget, but they're for things like the lease purchase agreements for the DHS and health buildings and the certificates of participation for the new legislative office building. And then there's a few lines that show kind of what those percentages are against the general fund revenues. And then on lines 10 through 12, this is the debt service assuming a base level bill of $800 million passed in this legislative session, and kind of what the variance from a 3.5% guideline would be on line 12 in terms of debt service. And then I also have a comparison against the governor's recommended bonding bill and the debt service levels that would incur. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Lee at this point? All right. I don't see any. We'll bring down then Ms. Kelly from MMB. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Margaret Kelly, State Budget Director with Minnesota Management and Budget. And I'm happy to answer any questions. And the one thing that I would like to say on this language is to support what Representative Hausman said, that having what we would consider a guideline as a restriction written into law would actually require us to either not issue bonds or to not have a bond sale, and would at times put us out of compliance and would make us put us out of compliance with state law. And I'm not sure how the rating agencies would perceive that. That if what you are looking for is information when you're making decisions, it would be information that we could incorporate into our debt forecast and our debt capacity guidelines and provide that information to you twice a year as opposed to having it written in law.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. A quick question from me. The amendment to the bill kind of does address some of that issue that you bring forward. Do you agree with that?
Mr. Chair, the amendment, I'm looking at it here, limits authorization and issuance of new debt after the forecast. That indicates the limit will be exceeded and does not require either reduction in previously authorized debt or cancellation of appropriations. So, Mr. Chair, we would read this to say that it would not require us to reduce our debt, but we need to look at it more closely to understand whether or not it would limit our ability to spend on.
And, yeah, that is kind of the question I'm trying to ask. And it seems to me that that is the intention of the author, that authorized bond sales would not be limited by a change in the budget forecast.
We'll have to look at that more closely, Mr. Chair, and get back to you. It would still put us out of compliance with the law, with the 3.5%, that we would take that into consideration when evaluating the 3.5%.
Okay. I have questions starting with Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to pass for a moment.
Hansen passes. Wagenius?
Thank you. Representative Vogel, let me just see if I can understand your intentions here. And that is to make sure, or not to make sure, to have us not spend so much money on debt. Is that correct? Not to issue bonds that you don't think we can afford. Is that kind of where we're going here?
Representative Vogel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative. The concern is that the bond payments are continuing to soak up more of our general fund. So what this says is that we would not go beyond 3.5, using 3.5% of that for all payments that come out of the general fund.
Representative Wagenius.
I think I understand what you're doing. But if we are not bonding, then the alternative, of course, is cash. And so we do have obligations. We have obligations to the universities and the state colleges. We have obligations for deferred maintenance all over the place. So it seemed to me that as you are promoting paying cash, that we need to have a list. And I appreciate the charts that Mr. Lee made, but the list I feel like is missing is, what are all our obligations? Have we added them all up? And what is that obligation that you would prefer to pay with cash? And I don't think we know the answer to that. And so I feel like there's this big missing piece of the puzzle here.
Well, if I may ask, Representative Wagenius, can you define what you mean by obligations?
Well, we have a building that needs a new roof. That's an obligation. Every once in a while, we have to replace the plumbing like we had to do in the Capitol or the electricity. These are obligations because we have a lot of assets in this state. So we have to pay those obligations. And so I haven't seen a list. We did it once in environment. We got all the obligations that we had outstanding for deferred maintenance only. It was a huge list. And so I'm just trying to figure out, to get all those lists together, how much money we need to spend on our obligations that are sitting out there now, and to see if indeed we can figure out how to pay cash for those obligations since we won't be paying debt.
Well, thank you for that, Representative Wagenius. My impression is that is a moving target. As we've seen various presentations through my time on the committee, we've seen those numbers in general grow, actually, but they are, it's far from an exact science. Representative McGinnis.
To the contrary, I think it is probably one of the better sciences we have because it's math, and you can figure out what our obligations are. We certainly did that in DNR and all the budgets in the Environment Committee, well, DNR in particular, because they have a lot of assets. I know the university knows how to do that. I know the state colleges know how to do that.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Did you meet all those obligations?
No, we didn't. And that's so the problem here, because if we're starting to even more contract, we worked on those obligations, and we worked on those obligations with cash. But if you are limiting the state's ability to pay with bonds, that's one thing. Then the alternative is to pay with cash. And we do have cash this year, and so that's where I'm going.
Well, thank you, Representative. Did you meet those obligations that you could not meet with bonding with cash then? Were they all met?
What we did, and I'll get you the charts, Mr. Chair, if you don't remember them.
I do.
Oh, good.
I'm asking you if they were all met.
We took them out for many, many years, so it wasn't just a one stagnant. We were looking at year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, year six, year seven, which we can do. This is a good accountant can do these kinds of things. And we worked on the year that we were in. Yes, we did. So the question is now, look, going forward, are we going to make sure we're going to be able to meet our obligations? So you can't just look at this one piece of a puzzle. You have to look at the whole puzzle. That's what I want us to do.
Well, thank you, Representative. We will not dig any deeper into these particular numbers at this time, but I believe there's probably still some of those that are outstanding. Other questions next?
Which makes the problem even bigger.
Excuse me?
Which actually then puts more obligation on you in using cash.
I think this is the point of the bill. Thank you. Representative Hausman has a question.
Did you guess?
I haven't. We had two lists going here for a while. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I find it ironic that we have, most days we have this huge crowd. And today on perhaps the most important issue, and one we were actually voting on, no offense to you folks that came, but I'm just shocked that there wouldn't be more people here.
Representative Atkins, the important people are here.
Clearly. And I appreciate Ms. Kelly, and I'm actually intrigued, Representative Vogel, by the approach in the bill. Ms. Kelly, did you check with the bond houses on the impact that this legislation could have on our bond rating?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have not.
Okay. Ms. Chair, Representative Vogel, did you check with the bond houses on the impact that this could have on our bond rating?
Representative Vogel. Ms. Chair and Representative, did not check with the bond houses, but I did read the S&P rating guidelines.
Okay.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Kelly, from a rating perspective, what do other states do when it comes to making these calculations? Does this comport with what other states do, as far as you know?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, my understanding is there are a variety of ways in which states look at their debt. And what the rating agencies would like to see is how total debt compares to some denominator. And typically what they look at is personal income. Some states do look at revenues. The ability to compare ourselves from one state to the other requires us to use a guideline that is used among other states. And we're in the process of doing that research now to determine what states typically use and what rating agencies typically look for.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you, Ms. Kelly. Representative Vogel or Ms. Kelly, my understanding, Representative Hausman's understanding, is that the current guidelines were adopted back roughly in 2009 under Governor Pawlenty, and they were at the urging of the bond houses were saying, this is the denominator we prefer you use, makes it easier to rate you. Is that, you're nodding. Is that a yes? Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, President Atkins.
Ms. Kelly.
I was not here at the time, but that's my understanding as well.
Representative Atkins.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe this is for Mr. Lee or for Representative Vogel, but the chart that I'm looking at, it looks like what you're authorizing is about a, what would that be, about a 35% increase in what we can, the debt that we can enter the state into? Is that under existing, where'd Mr. Lee go? Oh, there you are. I'm looking up here for you. So I've got the chart.
Chairman, which chart are we looking at?
This chart. It's labeled debt service spending as a percent of state general fund revenue.
Thank you, Representative Atkins.
I believe it was prepared by Mr. Lee since it has his name down in the lower corner. There's a dark line for projected, I'm going all the way out, just for the sake of ease, let's go to the very last line. So that's a forecast number, but it shows 2019 that we'd be at about 2.5%. You see where I'm looking, Mr. Lee?
Representative Atkins, make sure you're looking at both bars. There's a lighter bar. It's a little harder to see for our older eyes.
And that's the one that says all general fund debt as a percent of revenue. I'm looking at PO debt as a percent of revenue. And that's, you follow where I'm at right now? So my question is, does this, by passing this amendment as part of this bill, are we then authorizing a pretty big bump in how much debt the state can enter into?
Mr. Lee, would you care to illuminate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, so the if you look at the labels on the left side of the table at 3.5%, I apologize, it didn't quite copy over, but if you drew a line from that 3.5% all the way over to the end of the sheet, that would be what would be allowable under this guideline. So in effect, the lightly shaded bars that includes the GO and all the other debt service obligations, which are around 3.39 or so in the forecast in 18-19, so that the difference there in terms of debt service as a percentage of general fund revenues could support additional borrowing, yes.
And Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, and that's where I'll finish. And thank you, Mr. Lee, by the way. It appears to me that what we're adopting here is authorization to actually significantly increase the amount of debt that the state enters into, and at the same time, we are potentially jeopardizing the state's bond rating. And I'm not trying to be overly dramatic about the whole thing, but evidently we've not talked to the bond houses. I appreciate that Representative Vogel has apprised himself of the S&P or reviewed the S&P rating. But before we go down this path, my suggestion would be that we actually talk to the bond houses because I don't think Governor Pawlenty, who was, whether folks believe it or not, but I think he was a pretty conservative fella, I don't think he would have gone down that path had he not been apprised by the bond council for the various bond houses that it was in our best interest to do so. And I think the conservative path is to not be authorizing a big bump in the amount of debt and at the same time jeopardizing our bond rating without at least consulting those bond houses. And I don't know if we're urgently trying to move this, Mr. Chairman. I think we've got till, for this type of bill, we've got till the end of session. It seems to me it would make some sense to hold it until we could at least hear from bond counsel. And I'm not, again, folks, I'm not trying to, you know, drop a political bomb or anything like that, Mr. Chairman, but it does seem like a really big deal that we ought to have some, you know, thoughtful input from those bond houses before we vote on it.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Mr. Lee, is this proposed new, and for the sake of today's discussion, I'm just going to call it a new guideline, is it more or less restrictive than the current guidelines?
Mr. Chair and members, I would say it's it would hold future legislatures to a different test in terms of debt service rather than personal income and principal outstanding. So in the sense that if Mr. Chair, if you're asking, would you be able to pass a larger bill under this bill or under if this bill were enacted and stay within this guideline, or if this bill wasn't enacted, would you be able to pass a larger bill? Then, if this bill wasn't enacted, you'd be able to authorize a larger bill and stay within the existing guidelines.
So when Representative Atkins says that this is authorizing more debt, he's really misinterpreting this, because current guidelines would offer much more debt than this would. This is more restrictive than current guidelines.
May I?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I'm just, from the graph itself, it authorizes more. I'm not so much questioning the would it be currently more restrictive or less restrictive. What I'm worried about is this is a really big move that we are making that potentially jeopardizes our bond rating, because we just, at this point, we just simply don't know. And if you are asking the bond houses that, you know, the way that they do these ratings, as you know, is they look at one state versus other states and they figure out who's got the best places to put your money where there's the least amount of risk. And if we're measuring differently than other states are measuring, my guess, again, without knowing it, because we don't have anybody here from the bond houses, my guess is that they're going to tell us it impacts your ability to improve your rating or to keep a good rating.
Mr. Chair?
Well, thank you, Representative Atkins, but if we're borrowing less, it seems like our rating would be better.
Actually, not necessarily, Mr. Chairman. That's why I think we ought to have the bond council here, because if you're changing the measures, and I don't mean to monopolize it, Mr. Chairman, but just because you borrow less, if my son, for example, wants to go borrow money for a car, the fact that he borrows $3,000 less than, you know, for a $37,000 car versus a $40,000 car, that isn't the measure of the risk. The measure of the risk is how do you measure him against other potential borrowers as opposed to the amount being borrowed. You follow?
I don't. Ms. Kelly, would you please come forward?
We'll talk.
Ms. Kelly. In general, Ms. Kelly, would the bond houses like us to borrow? Would they look more favorably if you borrowed more or borrowed less?
Mr. Chair, without asking them that question, I don't know what the correct answer would be. But
really?
I think what their answer with regards to this legislation would be having it in law would be problematic for the state.
I understand that, but that's not my question, Ms. Kelly. My question is total debt. Do the bond houses like us to have more debt or less debt?
The rating is based on a variety of things, and the amount of debt that the state owes is just one of many factors. And we could have low debt and still a low bond rating because of all the other factors. We could have high debt and still a high rating because of all the other factors. I don't know the extent to which this particular factor weighs into our rating.
Ms. Kelly, you're telling me that I can improve my bond rating by borrowing more money? Is that what you're telling me?
Mr. Chair, I'm not saying that.
What are you saying?
Mr. Chair, I'm saying there are a lot of factors that go into it.
I agree, but the main factor is the amount of debt.
No.
Mr. Chair, I'm not agreeing with that. I don't know what the main factor is from the perspective of the rating agencies.
Really? So they don't care how much we borrow?
Mr. Chair, I do believe they care how much we borrow. It's one of the things they rate us on. The extent to which this factors into our overall rating, I can't answer that question.
But more debt can be beneficial for our rating?
Mr. Chair, from what rating agencies have told us right now, the thing that could be most beneficial to our rating is the extent to which we resolve our issues around our budget in a timely fashion, and the extent to which we manage all of our obligations, not just our debt. So that would include pension and our obligations with other funds.
But in all those scenarios, you can pick out one where more obligation, more debt is going to improve our rating.
Mr. Chair, I'm not saying that more debt would improve our rating. Clearly, our rating would benefit from a variety.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really think it would be helpful for everybody on this committee to read a number of rating agencies' reports, because their very first line always is, Minnesota, the best thing about Minnesota is we have a diverse economy. That is absolutely at the top. If they compared us to Michigan when Michigan was dependent on one industry, that's, I think, what I'm hearing you say. Because we have a diverse economy, and we're right now honestly balancing our budget, and they care about that. They didn't like the shifts. So all of those things were more important. So if we now have a diverse economy and are balancing our budget honestly, but we have higher debt than, say, Michigan, if it were dependent on one industry but had low debt, our rating would still be higher because of those other factors. Those are the things that make us strong. So really the only thing they ever say is way down, in many paragraphs down, they say Minnesota has low to moderate debt compared to other states. That's the sum total of what they ever say about debt. So everyone thinks ratings are connected to debt because that's when we hear about it, but actually ratings are have a variety of things. At the top, diverse economy. Second, how we balance our budget. Do we balance our budget honestly? So I think that would be such a helpful thing. If now that Ms. Kelly is back at the table, the question I had for her was the amendment. And it sounded like you might not be able to answer my question because I read and reread this amendment. In the amendment, we changed the percent from, in the base of bill, it's 3.35%. And in the amendment, we increased that to 3.5, and then we added these words. The debt limit in this subdivision may only be used to limit authorization and issuance of new debt after the forecast that indicates the limit will be exceeded and does not require either reduction in previously authorized debt or cancellation of appropriations. I read and read, and it almost sounds as though, so we went from 3.35 to 3.5, but then we added language that suggested, but if actually the bottom drops out of the economy and you're accidentally over, it kind of doesn't matter.
Ms.
That's sort of how I read that, and this is why the amendment was kind of the big deal for me.
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I agree in part with what you're saying, that to the extent that a subsequent forecast puts us over the 3.5%, we would not need to take action to reduce bonds that have been authorized in law. We would not need to cancel appropriations. What I am concerned about is the phrase that says it may only be used to limit authorization and issuance of new debt after the forecast, that it might preclude us from selling bonds that have already been authorized. And I refer to the words issuance of new debt. And I believe what you mean to say here is that this constraint only applies to future bond authorizations. But the issuance of new debt, the word issuance refers in our lingo to selling bonds, and that this would limit our ability to sell bonds that have already been authorized, that we do not have to reduce an authorization, but we would not be able to issue new debt if we are at the 3.5% or above the 3.5%. So if you had authorized bonds for projects and we had not yet sold those bonds and a subsequent forecast puts us over the 3.5%, we would be limited in selling bonds that had already been authorized until we came down below that 3.5%.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a point of clarification for part of the conversation that I've been listening to for the last 10 minutes. In a prior career life, a good portion of what I did was deal with financial institutions. And to the points made by Representative Atkins, I think we have to first make sure that we are understanding some differentiation between key terms that we've been banting about here. Not only do we have to first differentiate and understand what the borrowing capacity is, whether it be of an individual or of a state agency or a state in its entirety, but also we need to understand that for bond houses and bond counsel, they're looking at not only borrowing capacity, they're also looking at debt service capacity, which would include cash flows, as Director Kelly said, bonds encumbered but also bonds yet to let or issue. In light of what bond houses would be looking at, they would be looking at the quality of the Minnesota economy. They'd be looking at the amount of outstanding debt and the debt serviced on that debt, whether it be encumbered or otherwise, as well as the forecasted growth of economic factors such as workforce, transportation, educational workforce opportunities, a dynamic scoring of the industry mix based upon the economic forecast, and our pension obligations, both sufficiency and otherwise. And so to articulate a budget for the bond houses along those lines is really where a bond council provides that evidence to a bond house in order to provide the rating as well as the interest rate applicable to those bonds, not only current but ongoing. So in light of that, really what Representative Vogel is trying to achieve is an articulation on a key metric that bond council and bond houses look at, and for us to provide to it, actually, in my opinion, it would strengthen our case for a sustaining highly lucrative or highly desirable bond rating, but it also would act like a tail on the kite. So as the economy of Minnesota grew, it would refrain us from maybe going over the other two tools that we do for debt service or the capacity to borrow, and it would obligate us to take into consideration the growth of debt service on the existing debt.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Ulam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That might be a tough act for me to follow. Very good talk. My question is to Representative Vogel. It's my understanding, Representative, that there's 16 states that also have enacted similar laws. I'm wondering if you could enlighten me a little bit about, are they using the same type of guidelines in terms of percentage?
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, in looking at what other states are doing, and I understand the confusion that we're talking about with ratings, because the percentage in other states, it was rather difficult to come to a conclusion with that, although they are recognizing the significance of an income dash payment measure. And I pulled out my little thing here from Standard & Poor's 2011, and the discussion is, yes, totally, they take into account a lot of different facets of bond rating, but when they get into the debt rating, they specifically call out here, we believe the ratio of debt service to expenditures is an important indicator as it indicates the level of inflexibility that debt places on the budget. If you go down just a little bit further, it says tax-supported debt as a percentage of general government spending. And they give different thresholds, and they give different scores for that. You get a score 1 if you're below 2%. It's considered moderate debt if you have 2 to 6%. Moderately high at 6 to 10, and above 10 is high. Now, those are guidelines that they're using in conjunction with other things. I know this is subjective, but it would be hard for me to believe that putting a cap on how much we could spend as a percentage of revenue would not be supportive to a good rating rather than hurting a good rating, because they're actually calling it out in their criteria here as one of many that the lower that ratio, i.e. below 2 is low and so forth, is better than higher. And this bill is not a max to go to. This is a cap. This is an indication of how far you should go, and I think that's where the other states have been prudent in deciding that they need a measure like this to keep debt under check, because once it gets there, as we know, it's hard to make it go away, and this is saying just adding another test so that we're being responsible and prudent, and I think that's why they have done that.
A follow-up, Representative Ulam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One further question. Representative Vogel, I know that in your other life here, you're a banker, and we've had some conversations. Could you kind of relate how this bill dovetails or relates to your experience in banking and the former debt crisis and so on and so forth?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative. Well, that was one of the things that drove me to do the research and to come forward with this bill. The time to prevent problems is in the good times. And I know it's not fun. It's never fun to do less than you feel that you want to do or maybe that you can do. But, and that's why I started off with the example of a house. A lot of people qualified for a house of $300,000 or $400,000, and in that market they could sustain that, but then all of a sudden somebody loses a job or something else happens, or they decide that they need to put furniture in the house. So just because they qualify for $400,000 doesn't mean that that's what they should borrow, and that's what this is really about, is saying the other tests do a really good job of looking at how much maximum could we borrow relative to the personal income of Minnesota. And that's really the value of our house, because that's the ultimate taxing authority we have, is the personal income of Minnesotans. So that becomes your benchmark on how much equity could you use against your debt. But the other important thing to realize is that we need to be looking ahead, and that's one of the things that I was trying to do with this bill, is looking ahead at different periods. If we do a static measure today of how much we owe relative to personal income, that does give us a number today. But by doing this and looking ahead in the budget forecast, it also starts to project out and say, hold it, maybe we dare not go quite as much as that cap, because we may have issues in the future that preclude us from bonding, so therefore we need to be prudent today, and we will bond for less than the cap. Now, the bill isn't saying do one thing or another, but what it is trying to put in place a prudent cap so that we don't get out of sync, so that if we do go into somewhat more distressed times, we have a little bit of flexibility because we haven't gone to the max. The other thing that I've noticed in the financial world is it never matters until it matters. Right now, the bonding houses are not paying a lot of attention to us relative to this guideline. But if we get into a position where our revenues start to diminish and it becomes one of the criteria we're not meeting, then it's too late, because we're already there and our bond rating drops. So not only are we in a position where we're going to be paying higher interest rates, but we might be restricted as far as how much the market will be willing to accept of ours. So that's what the bill is intended to do. It is not to try to cut off bonding necessarily, if that's what the legislator wants to do. It's just adding another dimension to the way we look at how much we issue.
Thank you. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a few questions. Some are going to be for you, Representative Vogel, and I'm wondering if other folks can answer possibly some other questions. So I'm assuming the intent of this is really to reduce the future spending that we're going to have as far as debt service of existing debt and possible future debt. Is that correct? Is that your intent?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative. It does. A big part of it, though, is looking ahead, mm-hmm. and saying, what do we have to work with? So could it reduce future issuance of debt? Yes, if we, as a legislature, decided that looking ahead, the test doesn't look so great, we may decide to go a little easier on it. And if things are really looking rosy, again, you would have the cap to look at.
Well,
Representative Dean.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question wasn't about future issuance of debt. My question was relative to debt service, because I think that's what I'm gathering is sort of the concern here, and I think those are two different things.
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative. Well, it does come down to debt service as well. I mean, we're looking at now spending about $350 million a year more than we did in 2008 and 9 for debt service. That's $700 million, approaching $750 million every 2 years. If we didn't have to spend that on debt, we would have it to spend on other things, because it would be sitting in our budget.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Vogel. So, and this might be for Mr. Lee or the other testifier. So, we can pay down some of our bonds that we have right now with the surplus, correct?
Representative Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean. Yes, we could. I would have to go and look and see. There are restrictions around when we mm-hmm. can actually refund bonds, and the extent to which we could, how much of that we could do at this point in time, I'd have to.
Representative Dean.
So which then ultimately leads me to think about, you know, previously, I believe it was last year, it might have been the year before, that we put in place a statute that of a projected surplus, a certain percentage of that has to be dedicated to the state reserves, to our general reserves. And as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, why isn't there a bill to take some of our surplus that we have currently right now, and for those bonds that we could redeem or pay off at this time, why aren't we doing that? I mean, this to me seems like a really, really complicated way of trying to do something, that in these prosperous times we could just go ahead and do?
Is there anybody that care to comment on that?
There was a question. Why don't we do that now? I guess that my question would be, Representative Vogel, why isn't there a bill that does that?
Representative Vogel. Mr. Chair and Representative, this bill was designed to look at how much we could prudently borrow. Whether or not there's a decision as to whether or not you'd want to use some of the surplus for redeeming bonds, if indeed that's possible, because maybe they're not all callable. I'm not looking to address that with this. This was more or less a financial responsibility thing from my standpoint. Let's add a test that looks at how much do we have to spend out of our income on payments.
Representative Dean.
So to use the analogy of the house, I know many homeowners that when they get a large increase in salary or they somehow come into some money, they actually take a portion of that and pay down part of their mortgage, because paying, you know, the debt service is for many people, it's money that's gone. So I would just say that you should consider carrying your analogy all the way forward and say, we have a surplus. Let's begin to consider in these times that we have surplus, redeeming some of the bonds that are bondable. And ultimately, that's going to bend down that curve of future debt service that we all seem to be concerned about.
Ms. Kelly, would you care to make further remarks? I saw you were calling a friend back there.
Mr. Chair, yes, I did phone a friend. And there are two things we could do. One, Mr. Lee is correct in that we could use general fund cash for projects that we have not yet issued bonds for. So you have all authorized debt that we have not yet sold the bonds, and we have, I don't recall the exact number, but we could use cash instead of selling those bonds and lower our debt service payments. We can pay off our debt early. It's not as easy with a mortgage, but there are IRS and SEC rules and guidelines about that, and I don't know the value of how much of that we could do at this point in time.
Thank you. We'll go on to Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel. I'm not greatly offended by you bringing this forward, just for discussion's sake, anyways, because I find you to be very earnest and honest and straightforward, you know, and I don't think it's something, you know, necessarily political in your minds, in your mind. We've been touring the state, and, you know, when you switch it back to all these projects, we've had a lot of people come in here, and we hear their stories, and you were there on the tours, I know, and most of the committee. I'm not going to name who wasn't here or there, but we kept the list.
Back of the bus.
But anyways, there's some great projects, and some stuff captures your eye that you never even thought would ever capture your eye. And these things are far more complicated. And I think what early on, Representative Wagenius kind of talked about an effort to make a list, and you know, and that is really something all of us, I know this is a more heated day, but that's really something that we all can, I think, a place where we could all challenge ourselves in the, you know, think of a higher ed, for example, all the roofs and all the buildings. I mean, just have an honest discussion of how are we going to pay for these things. I remember, I'm a trail guy, and I remember trails, when she did that on trails, we all love trails. I've looked at your bills. I've signed on some of them. And we, if we built that out, I mean, the number is huge. And then, okay, we build them. And then a couple years later, after we built them, and, you know, they're either going to, like, the loose line trail out there in Erdahl's is gone from gravel, and all of a sudden they want tar. So what's going to happen with tar?
Bigger and better.
About 5 years from now or 10 years from now, we're going to need tar again. So, so these are real, honest discussions. But, I have a little, you know, I remember switching to like some of your aisles discussion about kitchen table economics, and I know you're a banker, but I actually would propose that we don't do what you're saying, and some of it is because I think people have surprises. I think you know, the economy might change. It there might be opportunities that we don't foresee. You know, contractors might be a lot of them on the bench all of a sudden. And here we have a chance, you know, the Depression era kind of concept where you could put a bunch of people to work and grow us, you know, and strengthen your state and all of a sudden go after all those roofs in one clean sweep. And you may have to go out a bigger number in that year beyond what you're talking about. You know, my kids, you know, are wrapping up college, and one of them got accepted to a better school. So, I mean, arguably you could say, well, you know, I mean, the math was really bad. You know, should we do it or not? And time will tell if it was the right decision. But I, you know, we reached beyond, and we were able to do it. And I think that's a good example. Sometimes money's cheaper too. I mean, the rates go down, and maybe that's the time to do some stuff that you weren't able to do. So, my other point. So that's kind of that. And you know, kitchen economics aren't always that simple, you know. So in my mind, I sure, as a banker, you're gonna, you know, I've been to banks and I've had banks tell me no, and I bought a business once and I failed, and I probably should have listened to my banker, you know, and I lost some money, but you know, I learned a lot too. I think I learned more from that than I did from some of my college years, especially at Golden Valley with Representative Albright. So transitioning, I think I would support a more flexible model. My other point is I remember a couple of years ago we were talking about the bond issue, and of course this comes up. This is nothing new. I mean, you guys are leading it, but Representative Hausman had the same discussion a couple of years ago, and I remember one thing that really stood out to me was the relationship part of the bonding houses. And I don't claim to be a bonding house expert, but one of the things they said that really stood out to me was the relationship that we have as members and our commitment to keeping Minnesota government running. And we've failed as, and I don't want to get into who's done what and who, but we've failed. We've had government shutdowns. And I would argue that we're, you know, I kind of saw your targets today, and, you know, there's some combat coming. And, you know, again, this is a political building. There's going to be conflict. But, you know, I'd hate to see us where we come to lockerheads and can't pass stuff. And to me, that's a bigger problem, not being willing to compromise, not being able to move Minnesota forward. So if I'm a bond house, what I've read and what I heard is those are bigger problems. That leaving that than an actual number and those sort of things. So I challenge us to work on our relationships and meet the challenge, a little bit what Representative Wiginius is saying, find out what the number is. And I think it was Al Quia actually said, you know, like a budget, you don't set the budget at a certain number. You find out what the need is, and then you figure out how you're going to pay for it. And anyways, I would kind of lean that direction about the relationships and really figuring out what's best for Minnesota. So thank you. It's more of a speech than a question.
I noticed that, Representative Lilly. Thank you for your speech. Representative Runbeck has perhaps a question, perhaps another speech.
Maybe a speech. How about that, Mr. Chair? No, I just wanted to say I think it's just been a valuable exercise. And really, I think the useful document is this long sheet, because it shows the dramatic escalation over the past few years in this number. And I think the question we have to ask is, are we really ready to accept this kind of escalation, you know, going forward, and that kind of money going into debt service? So, you know, if we're not willing to look backward and we're not willing to look forward, I don't know what, you know, this committee's all about. It seems to me it's really, really important, valuable questions. And, you know, I don't think a little guideline is really should be a problem. I mean, there's plenty of room within that $750 million to do a lot of bonding. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
I do have a question. Can I, Mr. Chair?
Yes, that's preferable, actually.
A quick question of Ms. Kelly. I don't see I know Met Council does bonding, and CTIP does bonding, and I'm just wondering if those are additional lines of credit, and do they add up to an even larger number?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, they are not included. They're not general fund obligations, so they are not included in the spreadsheets that you're seeing in front of you, but they are debt that counts against total debt of the state.
And Ms.
As long with Senator highway bonds are not included in these numbers either. They are not general fund obligations. So.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be helpful maybe we can get a list of the total then, too, from Mr. Lee before we...
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Next, Representative Askin is going to take another swing.
All right, Mr. Chairman. Here's my point. No, I'm... I value this. It's been a great discussion. I think it's my favorite discussion of the whole session in a committee, and probably one of the most important ones. And Representative Vogel, I commend you for. I may not completely agree with the bill, and I want to offer an example. When we paid off, Julie and I were fortunate enough to pay off our mortgage several years ago, and I knew what my credit score was back then. 5 years later, I talked to my banker, and he told me what my credit score was, and it had gone down. My credit rating had actually gone down. And I was just, I marveled at how that could possibly happen. And he said, well, you got less debt now. And it's, you know, and you don't have the same payment history with the mortgage that you had. And so my point, Mr. Chairman, is I'm not an expert on these things. I just know that sometimes you have less debt and your rating actually does something the opposite of what you might anticipate. My request would be, and I, by the way, I liked your line about this is the goal here is to figure out how much we can prudently borrow. And I think everybody around the table should agree with that. And if we can set some parameters on how to do that. My one suggestion, though, is that, you know, when I go to borrow money, or Representative Leon Lilly here goes to borrow money, you go to the banker and you ask their advice. When you do something that may impact the bond rating for the state, I would suggest that between now and Ways and Means that we, maybe Ms. Kelly or Representative Vogel and Ms. Kelly, talk with the bond house a little bit and get their perspective, because my guess is the same question will come up in going to Ways and Means, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's
they'll probably ask the same, question. It'd be interesting to see what their response is, because we've had a lot of good commentary from some people that really know what they're talking about, but at the end of the day, it'd be nice to know what the bond folks say, too. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for having the hearing.
Well, thank you, Mr. Representative Atkins. Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Kelly, I was listening closely to what you said, and it seems to be the issue here is putting this into statute versus having the guideline. That is that correct?
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, from my perspective, that's correct, that having it in law would create a restriction that would require a change in law for us to sell bonds that you may want us to sell. And to the extent it were put in law and you decided at a point in the future that you wanted to increase the cap because circumstances may have changed, I'm not sure how the rating agencies would view that, you know, increasing your cap in law because it just didn't work for you at that point in time. And if it were a guideline that sat outside of statute that we measured against, that we reported to you all on, and that we tried to manage to, that, in my perspective, the rating agencies would view that, would evaluate us based on the extent to which we were managing to the guidelines that we had established. So putting it in law, in my opinion, would create a problem for us. But if I could just correct a statement I made to Representative Runbeck, Met Council is not a component unit of government reported in our CAFR, and so the debt that they take on is not reflected in overall debt of the state. So the debt that is not incorporated into the numbers that you have before you is primarily trunk highway bonds.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Representative Hansen has a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so an example of putting something in law that ties our hands, I mean, we just went through this with Real ID. We, in 2009, put something into law and we had to pass another law
We couldn't do that when we weren't in session because we're only in session for a couple months out of a year, out of 12 months. We're only in session a little more over two months. So our ability to react is limited. Our capacity to act is limited. I think we have a relevant example right now of writing things into law that 6, 7, 8 years later, oops, we got to deal with. So, Mr. Chair, it seems that, well, let me ask Mr. Vogel a question that, Representative Vogel, that you had talked about the forecast. So let's say things are going south, and this would limit our ability to prime the pump. This would limit our ability to do public work public works projects like Representative Lilly had, unless we lifted the law and did the appropriation, requiring probably a special session in order to do that one-two step. Is that my correct understanding of this?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this would limit, possibly at some time, the amount that could be authorized in bonds. The key here is that we're looking ahead. When we get the information from MMB, we're not only going to be looking at what this ratio is this year, but we're going to be always looking ahead at the ratio for the coming years. And that's a big part of this. Is I go back to this idea that the current measurements we have, which I'm not changing and I'm not suggesting we get rid of, are static. They look at the MMB does the budget forecast, they give this, and that's it. What this does is say, okay, now you also have to look ahead and look at your revenue forecast for 18 and 19 and so forth. And in any one of those periods, you can't exceed the cap. So this is not a bond up to the cap as soon as you can. This is a let's be cognizant of our debt load and make sure that we're looking ahead rather than just today. I don't disagree that there are a lot of things out there, and you know, Representative Lilly, the infrastructure always causes overhead, and the more we build, the more we have to fix, and the more we have to maintain. And I'm not disagreeing with that a bit. I know that happens. I think the key here is that we're looking ahead at the judicious use of debt, and saying, you know, it's easy to sign on the line sometimes. But it does indebt not only us, but possibly even future generations, because these bonds, even though there's a cap as far as how many have to mature in 5 years and 10 years, you're still putting future taxpayers and future generations on the hook for what we're doing today. And I know this is going to be this could make it more difficult, and I don't disagree with that a bit. But I've always found it's better to have those discussions up front rather than when you're in the deep trying to get out. And that's what this is meant to do, is make that discussion relevant, that we can't go there because we just don't feel it's prudent to go there, and hopefully we will be under that cap so that we do have some flexibility if indeed tough times come.
One more follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Kelly, so we would be able to look ahead, but we may not be able to act because we'd be prohibited by the law.
Ms. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would be we would have to work within the constraints of the bill. Our current forecast does look ahead. This would look ahead as well.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've certainly enjoyed this discussion as well today. Ms. Kelly, under current guidelines, just so they understand, what is the maximum amount that we could bond for in this bonding bill?
Representative Vogel or Ms. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rural, I believe based on our February forecast, our maximum debt capacity was to authorize $3.2 billion. But I'm going to...
Okay.
I want to check to make sure that's my memory is correct. And that would be authorization, a bond, the size of the bonding bill. You could do a $3.2 billion bonding bill and be within our current guidelines.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And ballpark, I think that is about the amount that I remembered, too. I'm just trying to get that clarified. And then Representative Vogel. If your proposal was law today, what would be the maximum amount that we could bond for?
Representative Vogel. Mr. Chair and Representative, I defer to Mr. Lee on this if we could, because he's got the numbers that he's worked up.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, based off of the debt service runs that MMB's provided me on different sizes of bonding bills and how much debt service would be required to service those various sizes, if this cap were in place, based on my estimate, in order to, if a bonding bill was passed to go right up to essentially zero, it would be a little bit less than $1.2 billion this year, and that assumes $230 million in bonding next year and $800 million in bonding the year after that. So assuming those base levels, a little under $1.2 billion would probably max out in 2018. Or 2019, sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I do not have... Oh, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And given the information we just heard, can we expect a $1.2 billion bonding bill this year?
Is that a question for me, Representative Dean? I'm sure you saw the current proposal that came out of my caucus this morning. I'll let that speak for itself.
Remember that song, The Impossible Dream?
Well, thank you. Representative Vogel, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for the discussion. Although listening to Representative Lilly about bankers, I'm thinking that little guy that has to get in the water pipe and go inspect it, if I'm not a good banker, someday somebody's going to throw me in that little cart and shove me up that pipe. So I do have flashbacks of our trip.
For those of you that weren't on all the bonding tours, when we were in southwestern Minnesota touring the Lewis and Clark water system, they were installing 24-inch water mains, and they had these cross pieces in the ends of the pipe, and they were welding the pipe shut. And we talked with this tall, skinny guy, who is the guy that goes through on his little cart, knocks those boards out, and expects, well, actually, there were two guys. One guy did the grouting, and the next guy inspected the grouting. So there were two guys that went through those pipes after they were buried in the ground to finish grouting and inspecting those pipes, and that's the job that Representative Vogel wants.
Mr. Chair, sometimes it would have been preferable to be a banker.
Representative Vogel, I'm going to interrupt you for a second because Representative Erdahl has something urgent to add to the conversation.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson, and I appreciate the description of this because I wasn't able to see that even though I was on the trip. I chose a side road with someone else to take me to that point, and somehow, I can't remember what happened, but there was a delay and we couldn't quite reach there. So I do appreciate.
Representative Erdahl.
What?
Would you care to name names?
No. It had something to do with cars work better if they have gasoline in them.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Well, now I think Representative Vogel, I think we are now ready for your closing statement. I'll try not to interrupt you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I probably started it myself, but in any case, just a few closing comments. This is made to be a look ahead, something that I don't think we're doing now that I think would be helpful. I think it's prudent management. Is it going to be difficult or make things more difficult? There's a potential for that. But if it gets us thinking and it keeps us on the straight and narrow and we end up in some more difficult times and we come out of it with a AAA, I think that we'll all be glad. So it's made to enhance, not to take away anything we're doing now, just add to it so that we're a little better off. And I would appreciate your vote and support, and send it on to Ways and Means and see what we can do.
Well, thank you, Representative Vogel. I'd like to thank you for the work you've put into this. I'd like to thank Mr. Lee for the work he's done to assemble these figures. I'd like to thank Ms. Kelly for her testimony today. It's been a most interesting discussion. Couple of things that I would like to mention. First, you know, we talked about the current guidelines. When a current guideline comes out with a $3.2 billion ceiling, it seems to me that something is wrong with the guideline. I don't think any of us believe that doing $3.2 billion in bonding this year is a sensible thing for the state of Minnesota. So looking at these guidelines, I think, is absolutely appropriate. Representative Wagenius, I absolutely agree with you that asset preservation is a critical part of our work. I've been saying that since I became chair. And recognizing the burden that we have, whether we can quantify every bit of it or not, recognizing that burden is critical. And every time we build something new, we are adding to that burden in the future, and we all need to keep that in mind, in spite of the fact that it's a whole lot more fun to do new stuff than it is to take care of old stuff. And finally, you know, a reasonable limit on borrowing so that we have the capacity to do the borrowing we need to do in an emergency situation is absolutely prudent. And to do that, and if we've got the capacity available to have when we need it so that we don't mess up our bond ratings in the process, is something that is also certainly valuable to all of us. This discussion, I don't think, is over. Probably never will be, but I do thank you, Representative Vogel, for what you've done bringing this bill forward. We're going to take a vote on House File 2970 as amended to be passed and sent to Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion carries. The bill moves on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Members,
Chair.
I believe that's it for today. Our meeting is adjourned.